Are we the snowflake generation? Is romance dead? Is social media turning our brains to mush? Is chivalry sexist? Welcome to 20s Questions. I'm Francesca McClement. I'll be talking to young people from different countries, continents, and backgrounds about what it's like to be a young person in this day and age. This week, I would like to welcome Jyotideepta Banerjee, an international student from India who is, like Chelsea from the last episode, also studying physics of data at the University of Padua. We call her Jyoti, though. Jyoti, what are the origins of your name? Tell us more, and thank you for joining me on the second episode of 20s Questions.
Thank you, Francie, for such a wonderful introduction. My name actually means a celestial glow, which is spreading. The reason my nickname is Jyoti is, for the starters, it's rather difficult to pronounce. And second thing, it's a very long name. Imagine someone calling me Jyotideepta Banerjee all the time. I mean, there is a derived Sanskrit word from which Jyotideepta is a very holy word in my country. But for whatever it is worth, calling me Jyoti is much easier for every other person who has ever existed around me. And that is the story behind my nickname.
It means a celestial glow. That's so beautiful.
Yeah, thank you.
That's such a lovely meaning. Oh, I don't think that Francesca means anything particularly interesting. There was a saint, Saint Francesco, but he's not really very famous. And I mean, he's not anything of any interest. When I was younger, my classmate, she was called Valentina. And so there's St. Valentine's, and she always used to boast about how Valentine's was like a really important day. And I used to be fuming that St. Francesco was not an important day, and no one cares about St. Francesco the day. So yeah, I was very, very annoyed about that. But yeah, celestial glow, that is
pretty. But good thing is, I mean, it's a very common name, and it sounds very nice to the ears, so be happy there.
It is. No, it's lovely. So would you like to tell us why you chose to move to Italy to do your master's?
Well, I was looking for a combination of the course which I'm currently pursuing, which is a master's in physics of data. And for the kind of course structure and the rigorous academic nature at here in University of Padua is one of the reasons why I chose to go ahead. I would like to keep the discussions about, oh, it's a student city and how pretty it is, and maybe a little underlying interest in some of my other friends who are around in and around Italy. But my first and most primary reason was because I was chasing the course, and I was fortunate to find it here, and I decided to join in Padua.
And did you always know that sort of physics of data was what you wanted to do?
Oh, well, it's surprising that I started off with an interest in physics and economics. That is why I chose economics in my high school. But I eventually switched to the field of physics and data science, which was in my university. And that is where I realized the importance of both data science and physics in, like, you know, my life. I don't know about in general, but in my life, I did realize it is something which is of keen interest to me, and I want to work on it further. So I started looking for computational physics courses outside and within my country.
Would you like to tell us a bit about your hometown in India?
So I come from West Bengal, and the city is called Kolkata. That is where the first in my country, that was the first British establishment in India. However, I am settled in the south of India, which is in the state Karnataka, and the city is Bangalore. Bangalore is the IT hub in my country. I particularly relate myself more with Bangalore because I have lived there for most part of my life, although I haven't picked the local language too well over there because the language is drastically different from my mother tongue, which is Bengali. But I truly have every other trait of being a true Bangalorean, starting from the food habits to the slangs used to the behaviors and the typical attitude. So that comes about my hometown. Both, I would say I relate to both Kolkata and Bangalore.
It's known as the Silicon Valley of India, isn't it?
But it's also like commonly people call it Silicon Valley outside, but in our country, we're just like, oh, it's the IT hub of India.
And how have you found living here in Italy? Like, how does it compare? Like, was this your first time that you moved out of India to live?
Yeah, to live, yes. I wasn't expecting so much change in life, to be honest, because all this while, in spite of living in hostels, it's always been very comfortable, everything in place, not the worry of thinking about, oh, I might have to get groceries tomorrow, shopping, figuring out life in general. So it has been very enriching, I would say, because it's made me more responsible, and being able to manage both academics and living on my own and budgeting is actually very, very important, I say. And right now, at a rather early stage of my life, that I'm getting a chance to pick it at a student life is, I think, a great thing. And about the city itself, Padua is, it's a very pretty place, I would say. And I can just walk around on foot. I just go around the whole city. And that's, I think, the beauty of the city, that you don't need to worry about, oh, grab a train, grab a car or something. You can literally travel around on foot. Although it's been a little sad because of the red zones and the COVID, I've not had the chance to go outside too much, but I do intend to travel around outside as well. But so far, so good. Made friends, made international friends,
Nice.
meeting around, trying to pick the language. So, yeah.
So when you moved here, that was like your first time that you sort of experienced like having to do everything for yourself. Did you have like staff back in India? Is that why?
Okay, yeah, obviously. Back in India, I did have a maid at home. I mean, we have segregated works across the maids at home. But I have stayed in hostels for more than 4 years, even back in India, before coming to Italy.
Oh, you stayed in hostels.
Oh, hostel. Okay, sorry. I mean, back in India, we call university accommodation as hostel.
Oh,
So,
I didn't
yeah. I'm so sorry. Yeah, the terms are a little different.
realize. Linguistic
Italy.
differences. We love that.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, I would say back in India, it was very convenient for me because my university accommodation was literally next to my academic block. So I didn't have to worry. I woke up, I brushed my teeth, wore my clothes. Oh, I'm inside my classroom. But I would say what has been really enriching is for me to figure out all the administrative and bureaucratic work all by myself. Because when it came to figuring out making your own bank account from scratch, going around figuring out your procedures for residence permits and the world of problems which I invited for myself, including losing my cell phone. But I think I have visited every other important government office here in Padua.
Well,
So
speaking of government office, how have you found the bureaucracy here? It's intense.
it is very intense, especially if you don't know the language.
Yeah,
It
no.
is quite challenging, and it has been doubly challenging for me because nothing for me happened at once. Nothing at all. Everything had to be done more than twice because there was some or the other error coming up. But I would say that it could have been worse. I got lucky by at least, if not finding someone for helping me out is very important. So like initially it was painful because they didn't get my language, they didn't understand my rationale behind approaching them. But yeah, it's been challenging, but it was useful. Now at least I know how to deal with these situations.
So you have someone that translates for you.
Yeah, honestly, I did have someone translate for me everything, and then nothing worked out. So when I had to go the next time to actually fix the issue, I was all alone doing everything all alone. So I have pretty much done everything all alone, which is, I mean, what most people do. But like the issues arise in spite of whether or not I had a translator with me. So I would just say it's my bad luck.
Oh.
But it's not been that bad. I mean, now I'm enjoying making friends. I have everything in place, touch wood. I do have everything in place, hopefully. So yeah.
I was thinking of getting on to some fairly intense topics. It's about sort of recent events regarding women's safety on the streets and about, yeah, sort of like sexual violence. It's a bit intense, but I do think it's an important topic to discuss, particularly since you're a woman here in Italy. I just kind of wanted to ask, lately there's been a big conversation in the UK, and it's sort of spread around Europe as well, about women's safety. A woman was killed whilst walking home in London about a month ago, and it was sort of only discovered that it was a policeman that was charged with her murder a couple of days after Women's Day. So a lot of women started openly discussing the fear that they have when they walk in the streets, and it really made the headlines in the media and on social media. And I was just wondering, do these things make the headlines in India, or is it a conversation that arises often about women's safety, or like, is it too common that it doesn't actually make the news?
Actually, it depends on the time span and exactly when this event has happened. So, I mean, women's safety has always been a hot topic of discussion in India from the very beginning, for all the historical events, series of events that have been there. So discussions around the realm of not just women's safety, but also how the women access their safety based on their religious or caste, hierarchies, that too depends. But I would say making to headlines, it largely depends on how intense the situation was and at what period of time this has happened. So if there would be other things to be, which are probably according to the media and according to the political scenario in India, what would bring them more, attention, and what would actually help them get more attention of the crowd, is probably what make the headlines. But for example, I can bring up topics like the Nirbhaya case, which was a brutal rape and murder of a woman who was in fact traveling with her boyfriend. This is a case which dates back to at least, I would say, more than 5 years back, or if not even more. I mean, I was not too old at that time. But the case really made two headlines, and it was a huge topic of discussion, and how the four people were imprisoned, and all the discussions around what kind of punishments should be given, because India being a democracy pushes a little too much sometimes the kind of actions to be taken against the rapists, murderers, or whatever.
What do you mean they push too hard for the action?
Push too hard in the sense there is a lot of discussion. So long, it takes so long sometimes that people tend to give up on disbelieving the democracy altogether. Like, sometimes we wonder whether it's just something like, in my head, I would say, oh, he raped her, he killed her, he should be hung to death. But that caused them, that at least took about 2 to 3 years for the whole case to completely vanish, and then for them to actually get the right charges and the right punishment and life imprisonment. But in our heads, we kept thinking that that should have happened on the very third day of the case. Like, they found out, they caught the people on the second day, they should have been punished on the third day. So, I mean, this discussion did prolong for long. And I would say now in India, the political scenario is such that they do bring up these topics more often than ever. But there is also some hidden political agenda behind it. And they sometimes try to end up making the topics more tending to the lines of, religious beliefs or caste and hierarchy. I mean, it loses the essence, but they do come into headlines. And yeah, that is it.
Yeah, because I read quite a horrific story today about a 16-year-old girl informed her family that she was raped by a neighbor. They decided to attach her by the wrist to him and parade them around the village. This was like in a rural village in like a central region. And the video, someone filmed it, and the video has gone viral apparently on like Indian media, and it's like caused outrage. But it's the fact that this victim blaming culture is so, like, runs so deep, is so problematic, because so many people believe, from what I've gauged anyway, obviously correct me if I'm wrong, that like it brings shame on the family and it taints the woman, as opposed to the blame lying on the man, which is a really, like, it's a mindset that needs to be shifted. But these things are hard to sort of, mindsets are hard to change, and a short span
That's
of time.
That's true. I mean, the stigma of a woman should remain untouched until a certain stage of her life is still prevalent in our country. And considering that and looking at the kind of violence which do take place on women, immaterial of whether they are, sometimes it's not rape, it's also domestic violence. I'm not saying that it happens all the time in our country. I mean, we have great families too. But yeah, I'm just saying that these are things which do come up in our country, and domestic violence, ideas behind dowry. Dowry is where the husband's family expects to get monetary benefits from the wife's family as like a reassurance that he's going to take care of her for the rest of her life. And and if that doesn't come by, they have all these domestic violence cases that come up. And then this whole idea of, oh, if he has raped her, especially in the rural areas or in the villages, it is an idea that a woman being raped by a certain man, the way they punish the man is by getting him married off to the same woman he has raped.
That's disgusting.
But the point is it really being punished? Is he actually being punished? Is it a punishment? Because at the end of the day, you are tagging along the same lady who is brutally murdered, and she is probably afraid of being around him. Even by his footstep or breath, she would freak out. And then one fine day, you are asked to live with the same man for the rest of your whole life.
It's
so
taking into consideration what the woman wants at all. Just like,
I mean, exactly. So there are certain things which really trigger us, even like me being a woman. I'm not completely exposed to all these things, and I really hope I don't have to ever face something of this sort. But at the same time, it really is, it pains to realize that these things do exist. There are ideas which even people, very well-read people, do discuss, and sometimes their ideas are so critical and you cannot change their mind. Something as simple as, oh, if you're wearing short skirts, it is that you're inviting rape. Who asked you to wear them? I mean, why can't you wear black goggles and cover your face and walk around if you can't control your emotions?
Even in the West, like, having a short skirt is still sometimes used by people as like, oh, she was asking for it, which is obviously completely wrong.
Yeah, I mean, this idea of clothing defining the character of the women, or her behavior towards the opposite gender, in the sense if she even smiles at the opposite gender, that cannot define that she is inviting him. I mean, she is literally smiling.
Like, it's taking a completely simplistic view of what like a woman thinks and does.
Yeah,
like, if she smiles, that does not, that doesn't mean that she is inviting anything. It's like as if that sort of mere insignificant action is like means
exactly. Even this whole idea of there is, if she says no, maybe there is a hidden yes and she is shy about it. But it is so difficult on some days when genuinely a no is a no. And some men just don't understand that. Some people, I would say, not just men, some people sometimes, they just don't understand that. It might just be not only to do with romantic relation or so, but sometimes it's just very annoying when you are saying no and someone keeps forcing you, thinking that they will be able to change your mind, or the idea that maybe then you are in the face of denial.
Yeah, and then somehow it's making you feel bad.
Okay. Yeah, they start making you feel guilty about your decision.
Yeah.
So, there are a lot of sides to the stories.
Yeah, no, for sure. That being said, I think the vast majority of Indians that I've met are lovely, lovely people. And the hospitality and the culture and the food, people are genuinely lovely, aside from, like, the problematic things we've just discussed. People are...
Very true.
Yeah. I wanted to ask though, how have your experiences of like walking around and like just as a woman compared to from living in India to living here in Italy?
Okay, so back in India, I didn't have the opportunity as such to really roam around alone in the night, because for the starters, I was in hostels with curfews, so I didn't have the chance to actually roam around in the night without being worried of being fined.
The curfew.
Yeah, my university accommodation had a curfew.
If that happened in the UK, there would be a revolt. That would not be a thing. Like,
well, it's a very common thing in our country. And believe me, my university gave us more leverage. We sometimes used to call them and say, listen, we are going to be a little late. Is it okay, please?
What
And
was
our sorry, the curfew hours were actually 10 o'clock between on Sunday till Thursday. And on Friday and Saturday, it was 11. However, we pushed it till 12 on Sundays by calling them and begging them to let us in. They were okay with that. But I mean, the idea of curfew is because in India, you would just consider that students of the, children 18, 19, 20 are still children and they need to be taken care of and treated into the house by a certain time. I mean, if I were home, I would never be allowed to stay outside post 9 o'clock all alone. What's never. That? Even now, I wouldn't.
Even now, what's the age you're considered a proper adult then?
I have no clue. I mean, even if I'm 25 or 30, I will probably start receiving calls from my parents and they would say that, where are you? You're not back from work. We are worried. How long? I might just have a car of my own and yet I would be having to deal with it because it's just how...
Does that stem from the fact that culturally people don't move out of their family home until they get married, do you think?
Not really. It stems from the fact that I'm a girl. I'm a single child of my parents. And most importantly, you cannot ever understand what's going to happen. I mean, I'm not saying my city, Bangalore as a city is one of the safer cities in my country. But there is always in the back of the mind that a lone girl, she's outside all alone in the night. You never know what could happen. So, yes, it's more to do with the concern.
You think that if you had a brother, he would be given more leeway?
Probably. I mean, looking at my parents, I can't imagine. Maybe my father would be a little less worried, but my mom would be equally worried about both of us. Maybe if I would have a brother, it would be more to do with him being around me all the time in order to make sure that I am fine. So if I'm out post 9 or 10 in the night, my parents would expect my brother to be with me, and that would give them some peace of mind that, okay, I'm not the only girl. I have a boy with me. I don't know how a boy can save me from anything, but anyway.
Yeah.
It's just the idea.
I mean, guys can also be weird during the day in the street.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever experienced that here in Italy or in India?
Honestly, I cannot. It's not like there have been so many events, I cannot even count them. I mean, something as simple as I'm walking by and people whistling. Or maybe I am.
I think a lot of women can relate to that. It's, it's depressing that you can't even, you lose count.
Literally. Believe me, just today I was clicking a good picture with a friend of mine. So she was clicking my picture and I was posing. And this man passing by in the cycle, he just turned around and he was just like smile and he whistled and he stopped and he tried to initiate a conversation and we freaked out and we walked away.
Yeah.
But the point being, and he was much older. He was a really old man. It's not like he was a young man or something. Like, oh, okay, 20 or 22 hot. Okay, let me go out on a date. No, he was an old man. And I'm literally your daughter's age. Can you please get a life, man?
But,
yeah. But I would say that in the night, I feel more empowered when I'm cycling back because I can really go super fast. I'm not saying I don't feel scared. But the fear is much lesser. Although, like the region now, my university accommodation is a little towards the outskirts. But then it's much easier for me to cycle back than to walk back because the street becomes really dark in the night. Now, obviously, because the sun is out till late, it's okay. It is always there. This is a battle that I will pick of all of us, each of us, you would relate to.
Yeah.
We will carry around with us everywhere. So.
Yeah, the sisterhood worldwide can relate. Yeah.
I mean, but it's become a way of life now.
Have you witnessed a kind of change or shift in sort of how these problems are spoken about in recent years and like that there has been a pushback against sexism and these sort of problems?
For me, I will say definitely in our country, the discussions have sparked now and bringing up topics for both gender equality, or more than that, I would say equity, because that's what makes more sense to us. So equity and this whole Me Too movement where people from both genders, in fact, all genders, not just both genders, all genders came up with the discussions. And this did spark the topics, heated arguments further, again, relating back to topics of caste, casteism, religious beliefs, and this and that. But the way the discussions happen now is much open, much more open, and heard a lot more than that it used to be back in the back, say, about 4 or 5 years back, because then no one really cared so much, or the discussions was not as important as it is right now. People have started valuing these ideas more. People have started valuing mental health more. And I'd say that there is a good change, a shift which is for the better, that is coming across when it's coming to all these kind of topics of discussions.
And why did you make the differentiation, just out of curiosity, between gender equality and gender equity? Because round we don't tend to say gender equity.
Yeah, I would say this came up because this is something I used to discuss a lot in my university. So I come from a liberal studies background. My bachelor's is actually liberal studies. So these are topics we have discussed over and over again, time and again. And the idea of equity is something which, as such, I believe more into, because there are certain things that you cannot let go. Like, there are certain biological things, there are certain physical things that are just something you have to accept. That does not change the fact that you are less powerful or someone else is going to dominate you. It's just, it is what it is. I mean, if me being short and a woman means that I will not be able to reach a place which is 10 feet high and I'm afraid to try climb up, and if a boy has to do that for me, that does not mean, oh, feminism, I need to do it myself. How can I ask a man to do it? Or if he offers to do it for me, it is not like it is going to make it sound like I am any lesser than him. On the other hand, this whole idea of men should always open the door for you, men should go out and work for you, this is not something I personally believe in, but I know for a fact that at some point when I will probably be, there will be a very short period, I'm sure, hopefully, when I probably have family, there will be a short period when I will not be able to pursue certain things in life. And I will be dependent on my better half to do it for me. And that is only fair, because in return, I'm also doing something for him. There are certain things you cannot let go of. There are things which will always stay. Some things I can do better, some things the men can do better, some things we girls can do, we women can do better. So it's just both of us will have to find the equilibrium and do it the right way, so that none of us actually hurt each other in the process. And equality, again, when it comes into picture, that so this whole idea that then if I talk about equality, then you would say, yeah, then why is there reservations for women into the job? Why is there reservations for women in the political scenarios, this, that? But that is required, because you need to push the women to actually go outside.
Yeah,
so that is where it is equity, because you don't have to have everything equal. You just have to have everything accessible and achievable for everyone. While something is more accessible to a man, something else is more accessible to a woman. Something which is very rarely discussed is adoption. So it is much easier for a single woman to adopt a child, as opposed to a single man to adopt a child. There are things that we don't bring up in the discussions.
Yeah.
So the topic of equality is a great idea, but the topic of equity is what we try to practice in our real scenario. So that's what I just said. That's why I chose to say equity over equality.
That's really interesting. No, I agree. I mean, it runs both ways, and... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important to sort of note that feminism is also about sort of raising everyone up of every gender. And yeah, I agree that sort of schemes to encourage women and ethnic minorities and people of sort of every background into diverse industries cannot be anything but beneficial. And people that have a problem with it, I personally don't understand it, because I think it's good to have diversity at every level of society. And on that note, I'm going to ask you the question that I'm going to be asking. at the end of every episode on this podcast. What do you think is the best and worst thing about being a young person in this day and age?
Okay, I'm going to say something really, really stupid, but then I'm going to say something rational after this. Stupid is, at this young age when I should be partying hard, I'm stuck inside my house because of COVID. Something very rational. Good thing to be young at this time is because I'm getting a lot to grow as a person, introspect myself. And this is, I would say, the best time to build relations, both in the field of academia and friendships. And I also think that currently the scenario in our all across the globe, the way it is, we are really learning how to be codependent more than that of independent. And this is really helping me grow as a person. And I think I'm going to carry this ahead, and it's only going to be for the benefit. And this is a huge transition that we are all going through, both in terms of employment, in terms of the way academics is seen, careers. It's a huge transition. And I would say it's great to witness it, not in the best way, but it's good that we are getting to witness it at a young age. What is the worst thing? At this age, I'm really confused about what I want to do ahead, because there are a lot of responsibilities, decisions, and the prevailing uncertainties because of the current pandemic crisis that's going around, which is over like a year now, and I'm so tired of it. But and I'm very confused. Believe me, it makes it sometimes I'm afraid about what I'm going to do ahead. Am I doing the right thing? My choices, everything. I start weighing my choices for every little thing. So it sucks to be in this position, but I really hope we all emerge out stronger and better out of this.
Thank you so much. I think that's a really lovely positive note to finish this episode on. Thank you so much, Juti, for joining me on this second episode.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on this show. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to 20s Questions with me, Francesca McClement. You can find 20s Questions on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on my website, franthropology.com.